This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
David Dusick is the great writer from Golf Week who's always on the bench talking about big things in golf. And we're talking about the Open, which is, as you know, Mafia, my favorite of the majors. It's the one that I like the best. Carnoustie, Scotland, I mean, it is just delicious, just torturous, high-speed, like, cement putting greens, Lynx City. I mean, it's just danger at every single stroke, wind, you know, bunkers as deep as your onions. I mean, just absolutely devastating golf, and it make a man out of you. Hey, David, how you doing?
You're getting me aroused talking like this. My gosh, I'm fired up for round two already. Let's get it on. Let's go.
How great is that golf course?
It is so good. It was the first one, Scotty, of the big time British Open Championship venues that I had a chance to play myself back in 2006. I went up.
Wow.
And it's an unbelievable track. When there's nobody around in the middle of the summer or the fall, if you go up there and the grandstands aren't there, The North Sea is smacking around. The wind's coming off of that. The weather's never as good as what we saw on Thursday for the first round of the Open Championship. And the town is tiny. There's like one good fish and chip place, and that's it for the food. The drinks are flowing. That I can assure you. But the golf course is unreal good. It's so hard. It's insane.
Right. Tell me about it.
It's so much fun. You don't care.
Tell me about the course, like when you played it.
So 2006, I went up after Royal Liverpool. That was the one that Tiger Woods won. It was all baked out like we saw
right this
year. And I went up to do a little recon mission because 2007 was going to be the next Open Championship. That's the one that Padraig Harrington beat Sergio Garcia. We saw the coming out party with Rory McIlroy. Had a chance to stay right at the hotel that you see right behind the first tee box in 18 Green. Played it like, gosh, I think we went out at like 5:30 in the morning. Played golf there, went down to St. Andrews, played 18 on the back at St. Andrews at the old course. It was one of the best days of golf. It's an unbelievably tricky and hard golf course. You drive the ball, and the ball bounds and kicks all over the place. The pot bunkers are impossible. The pros even have to go out sideways, but it's not even easy to get out of those things going sideways or backwards sometimes, depending on the lies. The greens are slow. You can putt the greens. But getting there is brutal. But you love every second of it.
I just saw Tom Lehman chunk one out of the fescue into the hole with a nice sweet out and in and rolled it from the high grass. How hard is that grass to hit out of?
It can be difficult this year because it's been so unseasonably warm and dry. They haven't had rain in about 2 months at Carnoustie. The rough is not as bad as it typically is. Usually what you get is this knee-high fescue, sort of like the stuff that we saw at Shinnecock, and underneath that is really thick grass that can grow to be, you know, 2, 3, 4 inches thick. So the ball settles down into that thick stuff on the bottom, and you've got to swing through all that fescue to get down into that. You never get a good lie.
Right.
This year, because it's so dry, the rough underneath never grew in, and the fescue is—it's like hitting through straw, through hay. So the guys actually, in many cases, and we saw it all over the place, if guys missed the fairway, it really wasn't as bad. They were able to play out it. They couldn't spin the ball like they could from the fairway, but they were able to advance it much, much farther than you generally get in an Open Championship.
Why, David Dusick with us Golf Week, why, you know, I understand you said it hasn't rained in 2 months, but I mean, honest to God, that it looks like they're in Saudi Arabia playing. The ground's so brown. I could have sworn I heard him today saying it's supposed to rain tomorrow.
Yep, it is actually. There's the weather's supposed to come in overnight. Supposed to finally get a little bit of rain. But Scott, there's not even an irrigation system on the golf course. They're able to water the tee boxes and the greens. So the green complexes look that nice green that we're used to seeing of a golf course.
Right.
But it's not like there's an irrigation system and sprinkler heads in the middle of the fairways. They're not there. This is the way that they play golf in Scotland on big-time golf courses. Whatever Mother Nature hands you, good or bad,
wow,
that's what you're going to play. And that's what we got.
But that's what golf's all about. All these, honestly, these fancy-ass country clubs all over America and these golf courses, which I won't deny are very tough courses and beautiful and magnificent and well-kept and amazing and brilliant and different kinds of grass they use and everything else. But you cannot tell me that you will never sell me that that's better than what I'm looking at right now at Carnoustie. There's no way that you can top that.
It's different, which doesn't mean you can't appreciate both of them. You can't enjoy both of them. But the origin of the game, where it actually came from hundreds of years ago, is what we're seeing at Carnoustie. What we will see, you know, next year when we go to Royal Portrush up in Northern Ireland, what we see when we go back to St. Andrews. Those are the places where the game came from. Here in the United States, really, and it's, you know, not, it's just a different deal. The influence of Augusta National and the influence of golf courses and the way that people here think it has to be green, there has to be thick, lush, green rough, you have to water the hell out of everything. There's a quiet sort of change and revival in new courses. Some of the coolest new courses actually look like they've been around forever, which is great. And they go much back to more of this. But what you're seeing at Carnoustie is the way the game was originally intended to be played, and it can be so much fun.
So, David Dusick with us. Rory grew up on Royal Portrush, didn't he?
Rory grew up playing around that area, yeah, through Northern Ireland. He's between there and County Down and a couple other places through Northern Ireland, as much as his home course in Hollywood, Northern Ireland. Those are his venues, yeah.
So, I think he's in a great spot at three back on this leaderboard. Tell me about, first of all, I'd like to know about what you thought of his round, because he's such a badass. I love betting on this guy in opens, to be honest with you. And then the other thing I wanted to ask you about was all these South Africans on the leaderboard, three of them.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm not, you know, really familiar with Xander Lombard, but I can tell you that Rory McIlroy, it's interesting. It was a much better day for Rory McIlroy on a Lynx golf course than I would expect. He is not somebody who typically plays really, really well in windy conditions and in rainy conditions. He plays really well after rainy conditions. His major championships have been won on long, wet golf courses. When he won at Congressional, it was soaking wet.
Right.
When he won at Kiowa, it was soaking. When we were at Valhalla, when he won his PGA Championship, they were all on wet, long golf courses because he drives the ball so well. One of the things that we're seeing about Carnoustie is that everybody's long. When the ball lands, because it's so baked out and dry, you're going to get 40, 50, 80 yards of chase down the fairway. So the guy who's leading the golf tournament right now, Kevin Kisner, is not an especially long guy off the tee, but he's pretty straight. So when he hits driver, he's going to hit the ball about 280 yards in the fly. He's then going to get another 70 yards of roll. So all of a sudden, Kevin Kisner, who's straight, is Rory McIlroy long. In some ways, I think it's a real disadvantage. You know, you're taking one of the things that separates Rory and separates Dustin Johnson and Tony Finau, who had another great run. One of their strengths, well, everybody's got that this week. It's kind of a weird sort of dynamic. Brendan Stone won, a European Tour event. He shot 60 the other day. Obviously, he's riding high, made a putter change coming into this week, the South African that you're sort of talking about. But this golf course doesn't favor or hinder anybody. You can be a big hitter, a short hitter. As long as you can execute and be accurate, you can play this golf course right now.
I did want to say, you had mentioned baked and dry. I think that Mafia, that sounds like him after smoking and having a bunch of martinis, baked and dry.
That's for him, basically.
Oh, yes.
That's just
and then, and then you mentioned Kiowa, which I also have played. I played there where they had the Ryder Cup. That was a course. What a great golf course that is. I was out there. You know what I did when I played Kiowa? So I played it on a late summer, high summer day where, you know, the sun goes down at 8:45, 9 o'clock. And I played out there, and there was no one out there. And I was playing seven balls a hole.
Do you play barefoot?
I mean, no. I mean, I don't. I remember playing baked and drunk, and I played about seven balls, and I cheated on about five of them. And I was doing play-by-play of some of my shots and talking to myself, and I may have done some blow. Are we on the air? Hold on. Check.
Hello?
One, two.
Who is this? Check. Is this? Wait, what are we got here?
All right, so let me ask you. The guy that I wanted to ask about is Tony Finau, because I thought he played great in the U.S. Open, and here he is again today, you know, racking a bunch of birdies. I mean, he looked like he had about eight of them or something.
Touchdown Tony Finau is starting to realize that he belongs on big stages, that his talent and his skill are worthy of basically being on the top of leaderboards. He is somebody who has tremendous talent. He's someone who I think it's funny, Scott. I think he came up, you know, onto the PGA Tour a couple years ago, and he sort of looked like a deer in the headlights. I wonder if he thought he really belonged out there amongst the pros. And now what you're seeing is over the last year and a half or 2 years, there are sort of whispers about, like, well, who's going to be the next guy? Like, when John Rahm showed up, that was a surprise to nobody that he played as well as he did last year. Everybody had already known about him. He had played events, in Arizona when he was a student over there at the University of Arizona. They all knew him. Finau is a little bit different story. And when he comes out, I think that everybody looks and sees how far he can hit the ball, and they're like, oh, another guy who hits it miles. Tony's got so much game. He's a much better putter than people give him credit for. He's a much better course manager, thinking his way around the golf course now than he was when he first came out. You got to remember, he and Daniel Berger were in the last group at the U.S. Open a month ago. So he's starting to get into the situations where, like, we're at major championships, and his name is near the top of the leaderboard. And the more comfortable he gets with that, the more I think that he could snag one. I totally think that Tony Finau has a game that is capable of winning a major championship, and he's definitely going to be winning multiple PGA Tour events over the next couple of years.
So I got to ask you a bunch of other questions about other guys, the way they're playing, as we start heading toward the second round. Can you do another one, or you got to run?
No, I get for you, Scotty, always.
All right, so I want to talk about so many other guys, the way they're playing, including, you know, obviously Tiger. And then how about this one, a name that everyone forgot in life, Danny Willett. We're talking to David Dusick of Golf Week about the Open Championship going on right now at Carnoustie. So I know I don't have any faith at all in Danny Willett doing anything, but he is on the board. He's tied for eighth. He had a five birdie round, a few bogeys, but the guy is what? I mean, ever since he won, what was it, the Masters? No one's ever heard of the guy again. Yep. As long as he lived, is he? What's happened to that guy, and is this legitimate that he's in this thing after the first day, or does everyone expect him to crumble?
I do not look for Danny Willett to be a major league part of this golf tournament after, say, like Friday or Saturday. I just don't see Willett having four really good rounds in him. I think that he is the beneficiary of going out early when the conditions were the most benign, going out with probably very little expectation in his own mind. He's been playing better golf, certainly over the last two or three months. He's been putting in a lot of work. He started working with Sean Foley, who works with Justin Rose and a couple other guys. So I think he's grinding and doing his best. But if you're going to win a major championship, you have to put together at least three really good rounds and then have your one bad round be okay. And I don't know that Danny Willett at this point is capable of doing that. The best description to what happened to Danny Willett, whether he was prepared for life after winning a Masters a couple of years ago or not, is that they teach you, I forget who said it, but like they teach you that you got to climb the mountain, but they don't teach you how the hell to climb down. Like, meaning going around the other side, once you've established yourself, once you've gotten to the top, that now, like, everything changes. You have to change your goals. You have to change how you approach things, because you've achieved the thing that you've worked your whole life to get. And now what? And he really wasn't mentally ready for that. Sort of like in tennis, when Pete Sampras wins the U.S. Open Tennis Championship at age 19, he then goes away for a couple of years before he figures out, like, how to do this thing and then becomes Pete Sampras. It's difficult for a lot of these guys when they get sudden, maybe unexpected success to handle the crush of attention and media and the money and all the endorsement deals and everything that sort of comes with winning. Some guys handle it better than others, and Will is, I think, still trying to figure out how to handle it.
David Dusick with us. So Nick Faldo, he won. Obviously, it's got to be the Masters, right? The three Masters that he won. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong? He never won this thing?
He won it three times, Scotty.
The Open?
The Open three times and three Masters.
And this thing three times. So how... Yeah. Which one do you think that he likes better? Like, do you think he enjoys winning the claret jug or the Masters?
I think that if you made him choose, he would choose the Open Championship. Being an Englishman, growing up with that as sort of the goal, I think that people in the United States, golfers growing up, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, Ricky Fowler, these guys all grew up wanting to win the Masters and then the U.S. Open, which isn't to say they don't love the Open Championship or the PGA, but those are the two ones that are really at the pinnacle. Pretty much everywhere else around the world, this is the most international of the four majors that we get. Everybody looks at the Open Championship. You know, the fact that you don't even say, like, you're not supposed to say the British Open. No, it's just, it's the Open. They've been playing this thing. This is the 146th time that they're doing right. This thing, for crying out loud.
So what did he? So, he won the first one at Muirfield, right? And then he won at St. Andrews, and then '90, and then in '92 at Muirfield again.
Yeah, and Muirfield and Carnoustie are the two studly ones. I mean, there's some places like St. Andrews is another world. That's a whole different deal. Royal Birkdale is really posh and nice and sweet. Southport's a great town. Some of these places are like going on to the set of like Game of Thrones. Like if you go up to Carnoustie and it's not the tournament, you look around and you wouldn't be the least bit surprised to see dragons or the Dothraki coming over the hilltop, you know, getting ready to plunder and go nuts. Royal St. George, that place
Game
is
of Thrones hit right there.
It's crazy.
Did you? So this guy wins. He won it. He won all the majors. So he won the Career Slam. He won the Open as well in 88, and then he won it in 92. Like, when you see that guy, you know, calling the Open Championship, he does a lot of golf, right? He does a lot of TV golf and everything.
Faldo's on every week. Faldo's on CBS.
Right.
He's on golf.
But is he, like, one of the greatest, do you think, that's ever played?
Is Faldo what? I'm sorry? Pardon me?
One of the greatest that's ever played.
Faldo was one of the guys that changed the way that the game was played, and that he was so methodical about his approach to it. He was so not a field player. You look at some of the greats before that, like Lee Trevino and some of these other guys in the 70s and the mid-70s who were really great, Nicklaus to some degree. They went out there, and it wasn't that they didn't know how to swing a golf club or how to play, but Faldo took it to such another level in terms of his precision, his preciseness, the way that he practiced, and he was just really, really grinded out every ounce of talent. He's in the Hall of Fame. He's an all-time great player. He certainly is an all-time great links-style golf course guy. He knows his way around Augusta National, won there three times. He's a fantastic talent. So when he's talking about stuff, it's firsthand knowledge and information. I have tremendous respect for Nick Faldo.
So what do you think of Tiger's season and his performance here at even par? Because he had a couple of nice holes, and then he had a bad backside. And what do you think of him after – you know, what he's done this year, where he's come back from all of his back problems?
I think looking at the year as a whole, Tiger should feel really proud and really good about what he's accomplished. Because at this point, I'll be perfectly honest with you. You know, I was talking with your producer over the break, and he asked me, do you think Tiger can win a major? And if you had asked me that at the beginning of 2018, I would have said you're absolutely high. There's no way that this guy – there's nothing that we had seen over the last two or three seasons – that would make me think that Tiger was going to come back after everything that he has been through, you know, inside the ropes and out, that he's going to win another major championship. And now I'm sitting here with you after the first round of the British Open, and I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if Tiger's in the mix and potentially has a chance to win this year's British Open at Carnoustie. I think that he is
wow,
way better. Way better than I ever anticipated him doing it. I think this is a perfectly set up event for him because he's still wayward with the driver. He misses both ways, but he is one of the best iron players in the PGA Tour right now. And you can hit a lot of irons off the tee at Carnoustie, as dry as it is, because if he hits that 2-iron about 260 yards in the air, he's going to get another 100 yards of roll with it. So it's fantastic. His putting, it seems like, is getting a little bit better. He made a putter change a couple weeks ago. His short game has been solid. So this is a golf course where he doesn't have to hit a lot of drivers. And he's as creative and good. He's won three British Opens himself. So he knows how to do it. And I can't believe that it's been, you know, a year ago, we didn't know if he was ever going to play again. So it's an unbelievable accomplishment, what he has done to this point. And I think, you know, he got a couple of bad breaks. He got a couple of good breaks today. he is right in the mix, Scott, going into the second round.
What about Phil Mickelson's season? It seems like it's kind of weird, but it's like, you know, when he had the incident at the Open, is he's not, I mean, double bogey today on 16. Is he not playing good golf this season?
Phil's been playing pretty good golf. Statistically, he's one of the best putters on the PGA Tour right now, I mean, like, which is amazing because at age 48, usually guys' nerves are frazzled and shot. But Phil has found the fountain of youth with a flat stick. I mean, the guy can really putt. He is still excellent, basically from the fairway. He, again, sort of like Tiger, he is not a good driver of the golf ball. And on big, long golf courses where he has to hit driver, that's not good for Phil Mickelson these days. And that, unfortunately, puts him at a disadvantage going up against the Rory McIlroys. We talked about Tony Finau before, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka. These guys murder driver. They can't wait to hit another driver. They would be hitting 14 of them if they could. And they'd be blowing it 30 yards past Phil and hitting more fairways. So he's at a disadvantage that way. But he won a World Golf Championship earlier this season in Mexico leading up to the Masters. I know that he was disappointed not to really be more in the mix and win a Masters. He's going after a U.S. Open, and Shinnecock for him was a debacle. I mean, it was ridiculous. And he handled it poorly afterwards. at this point, you know, it's been a very up-and-down season for him. But I'm shocked still at 48 that after all of these years, Phil Mickelson is still relevant. He's a draw. People are excited to watch him play.
Right.
And he's going to be on the Ryder Cup team in October, which is unbelievable.
So the day that you played 36 and hit St. Andrews and Carnoustie,
yeah.
How much beer did you drink?
There were quite a few beers that were drank that day. I can tell you what. There weren't beers before we played Carnoustie. There was beer on the way from Carnoustie to St. Andrews. There was beer waiting before we teed off at St. Andrews after we got our tee time. But, you know, one of the great things about Open Championships and just British Open venues, so, like, if it's really cold and nasty, you know, you go into, like, if you're at a stadium, if you're at MetLife or if you're at any basically stadium in the U.S., and if it's cold, you know, you get beers. If you're somebody, you can go into, like, the highbrow tents and hospitality areas.
Mm-hmm.
You duck into any of the places to get a drink at the British Open. The famous Grouse, you can whiskey it right up there. I just that'll take the chill off your bones, and just it was one of those things. The first time I went, Scott, it was like manna from heaven. I was like, "You got to be kidding me!" All of a sudden, like it was the best. But yeah, we enjoyed a few pops for sure.
Wow.
St. Andrews before and after that round.
That's absolutely a beautiful thing. I'm proud of you, David Dusick. Always the best talking golf from Golf Week, the one and only, my man. Enjoy Friday and the weekend at Carnoustie. Always a pleasure having you on the bench. You're the best.
All the best, Scotty. Thanks a lot.
There he is, David Dusick, who drinks heavily while he golfs. It would appear to me, Mafia, that there was some shenanigans going on there. A lot of drinking on the golf course.
That's the only way I play.
Mafia, by the way, drinks $2 Pabst Blue Ribbons when he plays golf. And if there's not $2 Pabst Blue Ribbons at the golf course, he brings them himself and sneaks them on the golf course and drinks them.
Always got to bring the cooler on the cart.
Always. And other things. Anyway, that was interesting about the golf. I didn't know, I couldn't remember because I don't care that Nick Faldo won not only three Opens, because I knew he had won the British Open, but I didn't realize is that he won every one of them. He won the career slam, right? He won all the majors. I didn't know how many PGAs and U.S. Opens he'd won, one each, but three Masters and three Opens. Chicks dig me.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.